A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Table Manners. I'm Jessie Ware and I'm here with my mum. Hi, mum.
Hi, Jessie.
How are you?
Little tired. It's been a very, very busy week.
Exciting week.
Very exciting.
You were on fire last night, Mother Dearest.
Was I?
Yeah, we had our Q&A at Waterstones. It was the day the book launched. And, oh, by the way, did you know we had a cookbook that's out? Yes, it's out now. Please go get it. So we went and did a Q&A at Waterstones in front of an audience. Well, obviously, because it was a Q&A. But, and we have a very attractive, very young audience.
Yes. And very sweet.
Very sweet.
Very endearing. I wanted to put my arms around more than one of them.
I know. It was such a pleasure to meet some of you and just, yeah, a real delight for us. But Mum, I have to say, you were amazing.
Even though I was on the small seat.
Oh my God, it was so funny.
Can I just say something? When I looked in, when we first got there, there were three armchairs. When I went back, there was three high chairs.
Well, you know why they do the high chairs. It's so everyone can see you.
I know, but darling, you've struggled. You had to stand up.
It was just really funny because Mum can't really do a big a high stool.
But it's not comfortable.
No, so...
Unless you're drinking Cosmos and you're leaning on a bar.
Yeah, we needed the bar. But anyway, so you were in this kind of very low chair and I got a crick
in my neck looking up at you.
Anyway, you were brilliant and you seemed very at ease being an author, a published author.
Published author.
And we are actually going to put this episode out on Friday. So if you couldn't make it, you can enjoy the special Q&A coming to you on Friday. I don't know what kind of sick, cruel joke this is, but I got tonsillitis this week on the week that we are promoting a cookbook. So it has been impossible to eat this week. I have eaten.
You have managed, darling.
But it feels like vinegar is
it still
pouring
sore?
Down open wounds down my throat.
At least it's not coronavirus, darling.
Well, yeah, well, you were all worried, weren't you, on
we
Monday
were.
And Tuesday.
No one was going near you. If we weren't letting the children go.
Honestly, I was self-isolating and hoping for a miracle. And then I got pus on my tonsils.
Jessica!
We were all happy about that. And now I'm on antibiotics. But anyway, yeah, it was touch and go. But we're here now and we're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
And we've got the wonderful Zowie Ashton.
Can't wait to meet her.
She's right up your street, Mum.
She is.
She's thespian.
She's a thespian.
An author.
She's clever. She's funny.
She's beautiful.
Beautiful and multi-talented.
Multi-talented. So, Zowie is promoting a new book.
Do you know what?
What?
I like the podcast on Friday night.
Oh, yeah, I know you do, because you think...
It's end of school week and you can have a little
end
bevy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I see you're revved up.
Yeah, I'm revved up.
Ready. What are we having tonight?
Well, we're going to have some champagne to celebrate.
And on the side, some food.
So we're going to have some champagne first to celebrate our book being published.
Yeah, we've been celebrating, I think, for like 2 weeks. It's been kind of like...
Okay, we'll celebrate again. And then we're going to have short ribs, sticky short ribs. You've made a delicious roasted garlic potato mash.
Yeah.
The other thing that I've made is the griddled peaches from the cookbook with...
but they're nectarines. You've got nice M&S nectarines.
I couldn't get peaches.
I think it works nicely with nectarines.
So I got nectarines. I hope they work. I haven't...
I prefer nectarines.
It's yours and it's your recipe and I've not cooked it before.
Did you do it with rosemary?
No.
Oh, well, then it's not
But I just did it with sugar, the brown sugar.
Lovely.
And then I'm going to serve it with mascarpone and some Cantucci biscuits.
And are you going to do the orange blossom or not bother?
Don't know. I think it might be one step beyond.
Yeah, maybe right. Zowie Ashton coming up on Table Manners.
Can we say cheers?
Cheers.
To Zowie.
Oh, to Zowie.
Cheers to finally getting on your podcast.
Oh, my God. It's only been 2.5 years.
Love
you too. Charlotte, who's here.
Can I just acknowledge what just happened? Firstly, we thought Zowie was going to be a no-show.
Yeah.
We thought she was our first no-show and we thought, shit,
the
she's
car was
big
canceled.
Time and she's not answering the phone. And the car was cancelled. We were like, shit. No, it's fine. You're here. You were like on time and you turned up with, she's not little anymore, a little girl I used to babysit who lives down the road, who is a huge actress called Charlotte Ritchie. Yeah. You were both in Fresh Meat together. I feel like I'm doing This Is Your Life for you.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
But it's so funny. So Charlotte and us, mum and I, have lived on the same road as Charlotte. And I used to babysit Charlotte and Charlotte was in Fresh Meat with Zowie, and also Call the Midwife, and Ghosts.
Ghosts.
Anyway, so they just both arrived at the door together, and it was a lovely, lovely surprise.
But sometimes I'm actually just here for a drink, and then...
But sometimes we like to go places together just to... Well, just get some of that local fresh meat. Really revved up again.
Charlotte's going to show you the finest Clapham has to offer. But thanks for coming. And then I love that you're going off to see Buffy, who's one of the best people in the world.
Thank you. Yeah, that's my mum. That's a shout out to
my friend.
Shout out to Buffy.
But Zowie, thank you so much for doing this.
It's my absolute pleasure.
We've like bumped into each other at events.
At
we seem to be invited to the same things.
We are always
Which makes
invited.
Me always feel good when I see you there. Because I'm like, oh, creme
there
de la
are some
creme.
People that you just see and go, thank goodness, I'm just going to gravitate that way, away from all the weird people I seem to have fallen in with. It's really funny because I feel like events really started when we started doing Fresh Meat, I think. I mean, you'd go to stuff, you know, if you were invited with a friend or press nights. Obviously, you know, I've done a lot of theatre in my life. But it was when we started doing Fresh Meat and suddenly you would get these invites to things where you'd go either on your own or as a group and you'd know that you would get there and not know anyone. It's that moment when your head is suddenly above the parapet and you're making it up as you go along. I mean, literally, do you remember?
Mm.
We go to things and be like, okay, so what do we do?
Yeah, I feel like competition winners.
Do we drink?
Yeah.
That's what we always used to say.
Yeah.
Whenever we used to be in a photograph with someone genuinely famous, we looked like people who'd won a competition.
Oh my God,
Students who'd won a competition.
Oh mate, I know that
Except
feeling
Except for the
so
time
much.
That me and Kim wore matching dresses and mine matched my hair and you looked like a supermodel. And then we really looked like...
I like to relive that time, you're right.
did they bookend you?
We totally did.
So when you did Fresh Meat, did you know each other beforehand?
No.
No, we didn't.
So it was like the beginning of term.
Yeah.
And you had to meet the new
I loved
ones.
It so much.
Yeah.
We did.
I laughed.
It was so good. Oh, so good.
Maybe like the Friends reunion, they should do a Fresh Meat reunion.
It'd be amazing.
It would be so good.
Look,
I'd be there.
If it means free Botox, I'm yeah. If they need to make us look.
21, okay. Yeah.
I'm into it. I was just telling Charlotte I moved house yesterday, so if I sound a bit like a woman on a verge of the nervous breakdown.
How was the move?
It was really stressful. I moved from London to Margate.
I had a moment
in 2017 quit acting. And I was like, I'm done, I need to reconnect with nature, I need to just not be in the rat race and the whole thing. And, you know, I've been there for a really long, brilliant period of time. But yesterday, it was not working for whatever reason. It wasn't working. So I moved yesterday and I found a card from Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
After the first series, going like, I can't believe, like, this is an incredible way to do my first job and what an incredible friendship we've made.
She's always been a good girl.
Come on.
And I just thought, if someone who sends cards, I can always see a friendship remaining very strong.
It is a strong.
So you've moved back from Margate to London.
Yes.
I know a lot of people that have done the same. They go and they're like, that's me, I need the sea. And then they're like, hi guys, I kind of miss the city.
How many times can you go to dreamland?
Letty, you're so right.
So how are you feeling about being back in the schmog?
There is a little, to be honest, there's a little bit of, what's the word? You do feel a bit embarrassed.
Oh, I'm not embarrassed. I didn't mean to make
you feel embarrassed. No, not at all. It's a bit like rewinding on a huge decision. You know, whenever you try something and it doesn't quite work, it's absolutely fine. But there is the process to get back to the place that you were before.
But do you feel like it's helped you been there?
Amazing.
So then it wasn't.
Then it did work when it worked.
You're absolutely right. Look, you're talking
it was
to
just
like,
a stage in your life that you lived in Margate and now you're back in London.
I have to really become acquainted with the overachiever that lives within me, which means that everything that you put your hand to just has to be like well-rounded, success, successful, you know, oh wow, you did that to its absolute nth and the zenith. And actually, sometimes you're right. It's for a period.
Did you go to university?
Yeah.
So what, did you go away from home for university?
I did, but it was drama school, in
Where?
Manchester.
Oh.
Weirdly enough.
How fabulous.
Doing the show was almost like real life second studentdom in some ways for me.
So you grew up in Stokey, am I right?
Yeah.
And you, which school did you go to?
Primary school, I went to William Patton
on
Church Street. And then I moved schools twice. I went from there to a school in Islington. And then I went to school back in the Angel and then went to school in Highgate. So I've just moved all over London.
Okay.
Without any of the good transport that we now have.
But Stokey back in the day, like, I mean, transport for Stokey is...
It's non-existent.
It's shit.
Mm. Yeah.
That's why everyone's just really pleased to have their like local coffee shop and... Yeah.
Because you can't get
They're all a bit
else.
Smug now because they've created a world that they can just stay put in.
Well, we've always been a village. And that to see that grow through gentrification
How
from
do you
being
feel?
Like squats and, you know, amazing Indian food and laundrettes and greengrocers and key cutting shops. That was my Stoke Newington.
Mm.
To see an incredible independent...
And Turkish restaurants.
And Turkish restaurants and, you know, independent... business. There is actually, I didn't realise this, Stoke Newington had signed something, I'm being really vague, but we had agreed as a borough or as a community not to have any commercial premises on Stoke Newington Church Street specifically.
Oh, right.
And there was actually laws in place.
They're not there anymore.
They're not there anymore.
No.
Because we've got...
Nando's.
I wasn't going to say it.
I mean, I like Nando's, but yeah.
Yeah. I got in a cab a while ago and I said, oh, I'm going to Stoke Newington. I can't remember what it was, Covent Garden or something, or some audition or whatever. Going to see Mum and Dad. And I said, I'm going to Stoke Newington. And he went, oh, the front line. We used to call that the front line. Because cabs would not go past a certain point to Stoke Newington. And now people can't believe that when they know the Stokey that they know now, which is, I mean, you know, it's becoming a parody of itself. I still love it hugely.
It is very gentrified.
And that's great, you know, on one level, great. On another level, when you have had that place be so much part of your formative, cognitive development, it's hysterical when people think that that was your cognitive development
when
it was actually much more the frontline side. But, you know, I'm proud to be from Hackney, very proud, as everyone knows.
So what were some of your, like, early eating memories in Hackney? Like, the Stokey that you knew, you know, where were the spots that, like, maybe still exist that you would go to, although do they not exist anymore?
Well, I grew up on a road that was, when I think about it now... You know, the coronavirus and everything that was going on. We had neighbours that would just bring food round. I lived on a street that was a food swapping street.
Fabulous.
Which was amazing. And actually, our neighbour across the road still brings over a curry every now and again and is like,
how wonderful.
You know. So we had our neighbour over the road who always would bring incredible curries over. We had my other neighbour across the way who was West Indian and would bring over some of the most incredible cakes that you've ever seen. You know, I think I probably have been eating rum cake since I was four. It was really illegal. But they always had these really, like, neon icings that she would make. Neon.
Oh, wow. Hmm.
And they always looked like, you know, characters from some kind of cartoon, and I was really obsessed with them, and they tasted
And then you
great.
Felt a bit woozy.
And then I went was to sleep like, really well. Guys, anyone up for clubbing? I don't know about you.
So I've been pouring the rum in with a knitting, digging a knitting needle in, and then pouring the rub slowly.
On infused. And that's what you could taste in the food, that there was love and care. Mm. I think that's something that you can taste instinctively as a child when you've had something that's made with that level of attention.
What were your family offering up on the street?
My mum...
Are they big foodies?
Is Uganda... Huge food. I mean, in terms of my mum, she's someone who has used food in the most incredible way, which I'll expand on maybe in a sec. But when I was young, we used to have a lot of Ugandan food, which is brilliant, because that's where my mum's from.
What's that?
So that's a lot of gonja, which is plantain, mm-hmm. you know, for I don't know, the more widely known version, you know, the green banana that's fried up and is delicious. A lot of peanut sauce actually is a huge feature of Ugandan cooking.
We have that in Gambia a lot.
Gambia, they did peanut sauce,
yeah. People, I think sometimes there's a generalisation about African food, you know, it's a continent, guys, that it's like super spicy. But actually, Ugandan food is quite subtle. Mm. So there's a lot of peanut flavours.
What spices
like
yammy are quite...
we have a lot of kind of real yam-based dishes. There's a dish called matoke, which is like a yam in you know, steamed in its own leaves, which I'm not a huge fan of. Usually force-fed it. Which, again, is quite... beautifully bland, but when you start dipping it in sauces and...
But do they make what... Well, the Nigerians call it soup.
Yeah.
But would you call it soup or a curry or...
No, we don't
a
really
sauce.
Have that.
You don't have
sauce,
that.
Sauce, yeah.
Sauce.
The tilapia is a big deal.
Is that the fish?
That's the fish of, I would say...
Is that your native fish then?
Well, we're quite landlocked there, so there is quite a lot of fish that I'm not sure about. We've got Lake Victoria, which is, you know...
Fresh fish,
abundant.
Perch.
Yeah. But if someone said, oh, do you want to try this octopus? I'd be like, don't know about that, because I'm not sure that's coming from anywhere local to here. But tilapia is a really beautiful fish,
so
which is my favourite.
So if it was a celebration,
yeah,
like a wedding or a birth or a birthday,
yeah,
what would be the kind of things that... they'd have to
you'd have gonja, you'd have peanut sauce, you'd have rice, you'd have matoke, you'd have beans, you'd have a lot of sauces.
Sounds
as
carby.
You say tilapia, yeah, it's a very carby, it's great,
is it?
Yeah.
What was your
really
favorite? What was your
of course
coming
it's
on
to have
there.
A good bum.
It's very good, but yeah. It's only Ugandan food that does that for me. It's really kind of drops straight down. Yeah. Yeah, it's a very specific, complex carb, I think, that just drops to the...
Straight to your bottom.
Yeah.
So your mum's Ugandan?
Yes.
And where's your dad from?
And my dad is of Cornish descent.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, but grew up in Pimlico and...
Is that where your name's
a
from?
A very London boy. Yeah, he's
Cornish.
An Ashton. I don't know if our name is actually Cornish. I think it goes further back than that. I think there's always been some French, some... Polish, some Jewish conversations that have happened around the kitchen table with
Jewish,
my granddad. I know. It's so, why I think your podcast is so great is because you're absolutely right that the way that you experience food before you have the vocabulary to say like, I feel like this, or I feel like my identity might be made up of this and this. You go to school and you share pet lunches, or you talk about what you had for dinner the previous night, and actually it's this really pure and innocent way of quietly celebrating everyone's culture. It's brilliant.
It's really funny because I'm doing pet lunches for my daughter now. All
it's
of a
big
sudden.
Thing.
It's
what really are you doing? Well, you're feeling the pressure.
Well, you know what?
Jesse keeps saying, what was in the
I want to know
friends.
What the kids have yeah. got, because I want to know whether I'm being too healthy or
yeah.
not healthy enough. And it's not a competition, but I just want to know that, like, maybe, like, I can give her a few magic stars if she needs them, you know. Yeah, everyone needs a magic star. But, like,
Yeah, I just, it's...
We've all got corona.
Everyone's got the bloody cough.
Have you got the corona party?
Yeah, I called the helpline today, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. I called the helpline.
Thanks for being here, Charlotte. Yeah,
thanks for injecting us.
I said I don't have any of the symptoms except for a bit of a cough, and he was like, you need to calm down. And I was like, okay. I was told I was being irresponsible not to find out, so...
Yeah, anyway. But Alex has got a cough, and we're a bit worried about him.
My mum was really offended when I said I need to be careful because you're a person at risk, and she was like, I'm only 72.
And it's she's had bad chests as well.
Well, she gets laryngitis, but she still keeps talking, so you can't tell it's actually painful.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, are you hungry?
I'm hungry, yeah.
Let's see. I'm going to put some cabbage on. While
I'm going to sneak out.
Are you sure?
Yeah,
why?
Yeah. Because my mum and dad, I'm going to pop in to see them. And say hi and
family
have some dinner.
Vibes,
so, and also, this, I've got to leave you to do your thing. So, I'm going to go. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Charlotte.
See you guys.
She's only like five doors down, bless her.
I will.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, babe.
Bye, sweetie.
She'll love the buffet.
I will do. I'll see you later. Bye.
Sally, you may have just added a question that I can ask people.
What did you have in your packed lunch?
Yeah, what did you used to have in your packed lunch?
Okay, so this is a huge question for me.
Okay.
Packed lunches were extremely important to me and my mum. I feel like the packed lunch box was also
it was a new like Hermes bag each season. It was like each term, not term, but like, you know, start of the year, you needed a new.
You've actually hit upon something there, Jess. I definitely go for bags that are the shape of my packed lunch box. Free therapy, guys, just saying, with champagne. So I had the biggest packed lunchbox known to man. It was what a lumberjack would be sent to the woods with. Do you remember when those it was like Munchbox, I think?
Okay.
Came out, and they literally were the packed lunchbox favoured by park rangers, builders. But it was huge.
What was your sandwich?
So I had cheese and pickle.
Love cheese and pickle.
Obsessed.
I'm trying to get my daughter into it, but my mum thinks she's too young. 3 and a half.
It's definitely an acquired taste. Yeah. Was it my favourite when I first tasted it? Probably not.
Did you used to grate the
cheddar? Cheese was grated. Sorry. Pickle was... Remember when the mini pickle came out? The chunky? And
The mini makes a lot of sense.
Revolutionised the lunchbox for me.
Yeah. Brown or white?
It was always brown. My mum has always been very health conscious that way. Mini rolls played a big part of my lunchbox.
Mini rolls, yes.
Huge.
Chocolate.
It varied. The Marks and Spencer's ones used to have chocolate creamy stuff in the middle, and then there was the regular kind with the white poofy stuff. What else? The little Yazoos.
You
didn't have that. You were too old.
No, we did have Yazoos. They were the strawberry milk, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Strawberry and chocolate
did
milk.
Did I send that with you too?
Oh, yeah. Don't sound... Yeah, we
no,
had
I
it a few
times.
No,
I can't remember them.
I remember because I was always on a bloody
but Jessie,
diet.
But Jessie, I always...
I had like cottage cheese with Marmite. I mean, I love cottage cheese and Marmite, but I remember a multi-based summer camp. I was having cottage cheese and Marmite, but it was probably because I liked it.
I didn't give you cottage cheese, darling.
I definitely had it as a
Jessie,
sandwich.
If you ate cottage cheese, you wouldn't have been in the...
You wouldn't have been wearing what you were wearing.
But was yours quite... It wasn't too healthy. It was a bit of a mix. Then.
It was definitely a mix. I feel there was always a lot of fruit, so there were definitely tangerines, apples. I feel like my mum... felt like more was best.
Okay.
So she never wanted me to look as though I was like wanting for lunch. So like instead of one tangerine, it would be like the tangerine net, just like stuffed in the top of the lunchbox. And instead of just like one Yazoo, maybe it'd be the pack of three that
Amazing.
You would get from the shop. So
Did
I really appreciate
share
that.
Your lunchbox.
Always.
Did you share yours?
Fuck no.
Well, I used to share because I think I used to find other people's food very attractive.
Okay.
So it was transactional. I would love to say it was selfless and I just gave without wanting.
Yeah.
But I appreciate my mum so much. The things that mums go through, I now realise were huge. Even from something that feels small, like a packed lunchbox. Like, my mum would give me more because she didn't want me to look
like the poor person.
Well, I don't
know. Like for us. No, for us. For Jewish people.
What?
No, I'm telling you, Jessie, you would give more because you didn't want to look like you weren't doing well. I'm telling you.
Is that why I was really fat when I was a child then, yeah?
There you go. You're also wearing all your jewellery. That was like you were doing well.
Wear everything
I'm
you've
telling
got.
You that I wear everything I've got and never put anything away.
More is more.
More is more.
It was the more is more approach. And I think it was also about wanting to feel like a really good mum. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At lunchtime, if I felt like I was missing something, she just didn't want me to feel like that. And the psychology of food is something you realise much later on in life. But I'm really glad that I had a really good start in that way.
Are you an only child?
No, very much not.
How many?
I'm the oldest, and my brother and sister are 6 years younger than me. They're a year apart.
Oh, really?
I met your sister. She used to go out with Maxi Poo.
Of course, we talked about this at the Serpentine.
Yeah, so.
They're both amazing. I mean, to be an older sibling when there is a gap like that is quite special because you do weirdly have a mothering instinct when they're born. It's so weird. Like when my brother was first born, I would not let my mum say it was her child. If we were out and about, I'd be like,
"It was my baby."
Sorry. Can we just remember this is my child? I'm going to push the pram. But it was that brilliant. It was that brilliant inner fight between I love this new addition and also at the same time I wish they would just
die.
Go. I wish they would go away.
So Mum, die? Come on.
Go away.
Well, saying that, Lenny, I used to pretend my brother was mine and then by the same extreme, I would hide him under duvets and be like, sorry, guys. Guess he took off. It's just us again. Isn't this great? Should we go to the park? And they'd be like, where is the child?
Amazing.
Like, he just went. I don't know. He just wasn't feeling it.
I'm hungry. Are you hungry?
Yes, I'm very hungry.
Can I just serve you? It's
please.
Sticky short ribs.
Amazing. Oh my God, amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah, great. I've been all over the ribs. I've finished a play in New York last year and I would say that ribs and steak were pretty much the
which play
the,
was that
the diet. So I did a play last year called Betrayal, which started in London.
I've just got to come in here.
Oh,
because I said to Jessie, I think you're too young to have played in Betrayal.
Oh, bless you.
Because it's about a big affair and a triangular. Well, is that Harold Pinter?
It's always been played by much older
people. Yes, you see, Jessie.
But in the script, at the end of the play, which is actually the beginning of the play, because it's told in reverse chronological order, my character is 38. And I'm nearly 36.
You're not.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, Jessie, you serve.
Yes, Betrayal, because it was Jamie Lloyd who is like the person that like runs the Pinter or was doing that
he
season.
Did that huge Pinter season
that had you.
Yeah, come on, guys.
I mean, it had everybody: Martin Freeman, yes. Russell Tovey, Hayley Squires, Danny Dyer. Everybody, right?
Everybody. It was a really exciting. It was a really exciting season because maybe I'm biased. I just love Harold Pinter so much, but it was a load of his one-act plays that not many people had seen. And Jamie's thing is he revives classics and makes them feel really fresh. And so it just felt like there was this incredible new blood coming through. This looks unreal.
I hope so.
It's steaming. It's bubbling. It's just smelling all kinds of incredible. Thank you, Lenny. Do you know what this really feels like? It feels like going to your friend's house after school. Right, thanks, Lenny.
That's so funny.
Thanks, Jess's mom. So great.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I'm so hungry. This is literally what I ate every night on Broadway.
Oh, really?
That's terrible. How did I get through it? I was just full of
you
ribs.
You must have wanted to go
full
to sleep.
Of steak.
But would you eat after?
Yeah.
So where would you eat?
Oh, that's what made me feel like I was on Broadway. There's an incredible bar called Bar Centrale where everyone who's on Broadway goes because there's actually not that many places to go, good places. Yeah. You're in Midtown, you're in Times Square, you know, it's kind of tourist central. So Bar Centrale was amazing. and so like a cheers, like everybody knows your name, everyone knows where you want to sit, like, what you want to eat. I was like, I made it, baby.
Amazing.
Oh, Susan Sarandon, hi, how are you doing? Oh, Cindy Crawford, how's it? Yeah, you good? Yeah, this is my table.
You've got proper glasses here, darling.
This is just like my mum. This is just like my mum.
Really?
I love it.
Honestly. I'm really sorry, Zari, that I've offended you with a different glass that my mum didn't give you. It's going to taste the same.
It makes me feel like I'm at home.
Okay, good. Thank you.
It wouldn't be the same without my mum sort of trailing me, removing all of the things I put on the table.
Oh, okay, good. Fine. Great. So it's not just my mum.
No!
Perfect.
These are the best ribs I've ever tasted.
Honestly, you're saying that.
I'm not.
Thank you.
Honestly, you'd be able to tell.
It's a bit oily, but...
I can't lie. I actually bumped into Vanessa Redgrave recently. Come on.
Oh, you did.
hurt my foot, dropping the names.
Oh, I love her.
But
love
I bumped into her at a lunch. I know Jolie Richardson a little bit. And I saw her and I was like, Jolie, oh my God, how are you at this event? She's like, I'm really well. And then suddenly her mum, Vanessa Redgrave, is behind her. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what do I say? By this point, I knew that we were going to Broadway with the show. And I hadn't seen the play that she was in. Oh, God, why is the name escaping me? So I'm one day away from my menstrual cycle, that's why.
Is that what happens?
I just can't remember anything.
Oh, my God.
It's literally one of my favourite plays of all time. I'm blanking.
Okay.
Anyway, her mother was
in... And her mum was in it.
Yeah.
The Inheritance.
The Inheritance! So Vanessa's been in The Inheritance. It's been this huge hit. I haven't managed to see it in London for whatever reason. I've sort of been out of town. And so I think, what are you going to say to Vanessa Redgrave? What are you going to say? Social anxiety kicks in and I go, oh, Vanessa, I mean, nice to meet you, but I've got to say, The Inheritance, wow. She just took a beat and then she looked at me and went, you didn't see it, darling. And I went, yes, I did. Oh, what are you talking about?
No, I can't do it.
She was like, darling, no, you didn't. She went, you can't lie at all. You must never, ever lie. Your face is too open. You can't lie.
Oh, my God.
And I had to, in that moment, make the decision. I decided to be honest and truthful with Vanessa Redgrave when faced with her eyes, the, like, two pools of pure water. And I just said, you're right. I didn't see it. I lied.
Oh, my God.
I didn't know what to say. And why I said it is because I'm going to Broadway and I will be able to see you in it because you're also transferring to Broadway. So I spoke.
So you kind of you
in a
you
few. I spoke in a future tense, and I shouldn't have.
That was a bit mean of her, though.
She said it with the most.
Call you out.
She said it with the most open smile, and I thought I'm actually really grateful for this moment because I lie all the time.
Do you?
About having seen things that I haven't.
But is that a pressure? Because
it's a social pressure.
So many of your friends are probably in things. Yeah. And
you want to say you've seen them.
You want to feel like you're sort of part of it.
You've just been in Margate.
I've just been in Margate,
yeah. Yeah, you've been in Margate.
Well, actually,
long.
At that time, I'd been in LA, so I was like, I'm coast to coast. Margate to LA.
Oh, my God, babe. I love that story so much, and I can imagine
don't
the pain.
Lie, darling.
That's amazing. It's almost like a curve.
Don't ever lie.
Don't lie.
Darling.
It's a curve your enthusiasm moment, for sure.
That is amazing.
And she's right. I've never been able to lie. My face cannot... It can't hide.
But then you're an actress.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
Well... I think there's this really funny misconception that acting is actually about lying.
No, it's not.
It's about telling the truth.
Exactly right.
The actors that we really love tell the truth in a way where we go, oh, bloody hell, that was really to the soul. Do you know? Okay. And the actors that lie, we go, don't love that.
Okay, so when you're having you, Zowie's having shit day.
Yeah.
And you have to go and be... a character that is, I don't know, having the most fantastic life and blah, blah, blah. But, like, is that not quite hard sometimes to transform?
It's really hard. But I suppose the work...
You're not lying, though, I guess. Yeah.
But. The work is to connect to something that feels truthful that you can draw on.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's why I ended up deciding to stop. I think I'd been calling so much on my... emotional life since a child that I was kind of done with that. I thought I actually just need to call on my truth and have it be about me, Zowie, as a woman in the world, rather than I'm calling on my truth to serve someone else. I just need to finally start serving myself at some point. I think that's the only danger for me that I perceive in acting. It's not that you might get to a point where you go, how do I summon this emotion? It's that you might get to a point where you're summoning emotion so much on behalf of other people that you will lose sight of how to access it in your real life. And that's what keeps you warm at night at the end of the day.
So is that when you wrote your first novel?
I definitely wrote the book at a point where I was stepping away. Yeah. Because it was about revisiting the literal and metaphorical chapters of my career and my life. I mean, you know what it's like when you're in entertainment, suddenly you go, ooh, the membrane is really thin between me and this job. Like we were saying, you turn up to an event, you're like, I feel awkward. Mm-hmm. When do you decide not to go to the events? Because actually it's not having a great effect mm-hmm. on your mental health. Mm-hmm. Or do you just keep going because you are involved more with the performative side of yourself than the non-performative side of yourself, you know?
What's happening at the moment? Because you've got a book.
I came back to London to do press for the book. And I thought I was actually after London and Broadway, I thought I was going to take a year off. Because I still, look, I quit and then suddenly I was doing work that I really loved. But I think I was still playing with a different deck of cards in a way. I was doing the work, but I wasn't letting the work consume me in the way that it had before. So I was kind of, I don't know, I felt like quite a different woman at work. And when I feel like taking time off, I actually take it. And it's not because, you know, I have this pot of money that I can dip into. I indulge the other sides of myself that I've really worked hard to make sure are ways of earning. So writing or voiceover, which I love doing. I did an audiobook today, which is one of my favourite things to do. So I know how to hustle, and I always have. I think maybe when you start as a child, that's where you just live, you know, is in the hustle.
What was your first job?
I started at the Anna Scher Theatre really young.
Oh, okay. And that's where Daniel Kaluuya went.
It's a Dexter Fletcher thing. Yeah, it's huge.
Dexter Fletcher.
Were you into Press Gang? Is that why you went there?
Loved it. I was too young. Press Gang happened yet.
I knew Press Gang. Oh, no, you were too young.
When I did my first class at 5 and a half.
First job when you were 6. Mm-hmm. What was that?
Jack and Rory.
Wow!
And in my move, guess what I found?
What?
Back then you used to get a letter, typewriter written letter, confirming your status as a hired person. You'd have the BBC heading in one corner, the shows, sort of, you know, artwork up in another corner, and a thank you for joining, and letting you know that the costume and hair people would be in touch. And what was the other thing that was really funny? I've got it on my phone, hold on.
So this has the old BBC.
It's got a number starting 081.
Oh, wow, yeah. 2nd of December, 1991. Dear Zowie, thank you for, what's that say? For agreeing to take part in our Jack and Rory programme.
Jack and Rory.
Entitled Seeing Off Uncle Jack. Please find scripts enclosed. The costume designer, Dinah Collin, and makeup designer, DJ Roberts, will be in touch with you in due course. Wow, why did they need to be in touch with you? The makeup, I mean, that's...
Why would they need to be in touch with a 6-year-old child?
Yeah.
And this is the first chapter in my book.
Directly to her,
not your mum. Or your dad. That's amazing. Rehearsals for Seeing Off Jack will take place on Friday,
and I remember them clearly.
Really?
I remember them clearer than something that happened yesterday.
Because it was a happy memory or petrifying?
It's a completely formative time. So when I came to write the first chapter in my book, it was clear that it had to start with the first ever job that I did, just because that's the day that I feel like I realised I had the capacity to carry more than one person in my psyche as a 6-year-old.
That's a big thing.
Was
you
that
know?
A blessing yeah. or a curse?
For me, it's been a blessing. I have an incredible family. I have an incredible set of friends. I have an incredible set of values that are from Anna Scher, from, you know, all the different institutions that I've been through in my life that have given me this rod of steel. So I always joke and say, instead of like a heroin addiction or a shoplifting spree that we've seen other child actors do over the past however many years. Mm. I've written the book. Like, that's my...
Well done.
That's my, like, fucked up rebellion. really says something about who I am. It's like, yeah, how are you going to really, you know, rebel against this mad thing that you ended up doing as a kid? I'm like, maybe I could write a novel about it and talk to people about it.
So the novel's about...
It's not... I always say I didn't want it to be an actor's memoir because I find them so cringe, especially if you're under the age of like 80. It's like, what are you telling me about your life and about the
industry? So you've written it as a novel?
It's a novel. It sort of works between the realms of fact and fiction because that's, I think, how I've experienced my own life. Mm. I don't experience life in a linear way, really. I don't know.
Do you get off with Jack Whitehall in your novel?
Funnily enough, I left him out.
Work is really good. Like, you work all the time.
Yeah,
and you do amazing things.
You are working as an actress now.
Yeah.
What are you doing now?
I just started a few very exciting episodes of The Handmaid's Tale. I'm obsessed with the show.
I'm obsessed too. And I've been pregnant for a lot of those shows and it's very stressful.
It's really huge. It's so funny because when I read that book when I was younger, in my teens, and I was obsessed with Margaret Atwood.
Me too. I haven't watched it because I'm so obsessed with the book.
It's really well done.
Can I just say, we are so similar, Lenny. I didn't
want to watch it because the book was so seminal to my life.
I think I had a resistance there too.
Yeah.
I was so obsessed with her when I was younger. I read like all of her novels like way too early and you know.
What was it? Was it The Blind Assassin that she wrote as well?
Oh, I didn't read that at the time.
I loved it.
I wrote Freudian slip. I read The Robber Bride, which is one of her novels, which is literally that thick.
Yeah. Oh.
And I was about 11.
And it follows
this group of women and there's like, you know, torture and rape and relationships and that. Anyway, so The Handmaids was part of my formative reading. And you're right. When the show came out, I thought, oh my God, how is this going to happen?
But Elizabeth Moss is so brilliant.
I had auditioned for the show and read one of the scripts. And I went, oh my God, this is as good as it could be.
Well, she's involved, isn't she, Margaret?
She's really involved. But when I read that book at first, I... saw all of the things that I wanted to rail against as a young woman. You know, I was like, I cannot believe, like, female oppression and, you know, silencing and torture and, you know, I had this very anarchic response. And now I watch it as an older person, as an older woman, and I go, oh my God, this is about motherhood. Mm. Truly. I never would have thought that as a teenager. That's just not where my head was at.
Are you going to keep on writing?
Yeah, definitely.
And just keep on just doing everything and more and whatever you fancy. Is there anything else that you feel like you... Do you sing?
No.
Maybe you can.
Maybe I can.
On that note, what's your karaoke song?
Okay. I feel like my go-to... I mean, obviously it's going to be a catalogue from the 90s somewhere. It's something like Money Talks.
Oh, okay.
Anything where I can be my own backing singer. So you're like, money talks,
dirty cash, what
yeah.
you...
Okay, yeah. And so you're like two people in one.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
we talked about you being a baker.
Yeah.
What is your like go-to like little kind of piece de resistance?
Right now it's a chocolate orange marble cake.
Oh, right, cool. Ooh. I'm into that.
Yeah.
Anybody's recipe that you are loving?
I love cobbling together random bloggers. Ah. Because again, like I said, I just take bits that make sense from one and then from another and I make my own thing.
You're the Felicity Cloaks of the acting world in bakery.
You've nailed it.
To make the perfect.
That's me.
Okay.
I also really get quite a lot from doing the marbled icing. I feel like there's an act to it. At first, it just looked like I couldn't decide what icing I wanted. And the sort of the vanilla icing was just losing against the chocolate. The ratios were just so wrong.
Are you feathering on that or marbling?
Marbling.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never done that.
It's not easy.
No. I know,
especially if the consistency is completely wrong, because the vanilla icing was like dripping off the side of the cake, and the chocolate icing was like, I'm not moving. So it looked, it was actually tragic, the first one that I made, and that made me quite upset. And then I've just gone back to it again and again and again, because chocolate and orange, I think for me, is a really nostalgic taste. Mm. I've loved chocolate orange ever since I was a child.
Did you have one in your stocking?
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got some little chocolate orange bites.
Have you?
Yeah.
See, I don't like the bites. It's got to come out of the orange for me to really enjoy it. I've got to bang the orange and take out the segments.
Yeah.
Okay, so Last Supper. Starter, main, pud, drink of choice.
The main of these ribs.
Oh, you're sweet.
The starter, I'm going to go quite Italian on this. One of the first times I had like a full 5, 6, 7 course Italian meal, I was surprised by how much pasta there was. I thought you were sort of supposed to avoid the pasta, but there's like 2, sometimes 3 pasta courses.
Right.
So I think my starter would be the cacio e pepe from Eataly in Chelsea in New York. That's one of my favorite eateries. It's, you know, it just does what it says on the tin. You've got the pizza station, the pasta station, the fish station. I just go to heaven every time I'm there. So I would say I would start with a spaghetti. And then I would move on to your ribs. And I would already be quite full. I'd leave the potato, maybe. Yeah. I'd just leave a very pure ribs and broccoli. And then what was the next one?
And drink. What would you have? What's your drink? Cocky tea. What are you going to have?
What am I going to have, though?
What's your go-to drink that you start the night with?
I love a red wine. I just do.
Yeah. Any particular?
Aldi do a brilliant
do they? Oh, yeah.
They do some incredible Primitivo red.
From Lidl is...
The Primitivo from Aldi is amazing.
Oh, is it good?
Is it?
I live next to one.
Oh,
in
so
my,
you
I
need
lived
to
next
go
one.
To an Aldi, darling.
I love Aldi.
I don't know why. I think that's
just... skincare's really good too.
It's amazing. I think moving to Margate reminds me of buying wine from Aldi and not expecting that much and getting a whole world of incredible rewards from their wine selection.
I hope you're near an Aldi now.
I'm not. It's
not
okay, though. No,
we have got Lidl.
I feel like, you know, wine snobbery or drink snobbery, I've got a lot of time for it, because when you really taste something super expensive or super aged or whatever, it's a different world. Like, I did a job in South Africa and had loads of time off, and the best thing that I did was learn how to wine taste.
God, that wine is
so
delicious.
And I was like,
delicious.
I'm really happy to be a wine snob.
Yeah.
This is actually brilliant.
But then I get too pissed to remember what they all said in the wine tasting. Like, it's like,
that's
oh,
cause
oh
you that's because so you good. Don't drink enough.
I don't. Yeah, no, it's true.
You need to try harder.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, you weren't ready. Like Christmas dinner, you know, you need to eat a dinner before the Christmas dinner so you're nice and stretched out.
I can do that shit. Okay, so a red wine from Aldi.
Yes.
And pud.
Oh, or a glass of Krug. See, ooh, that's me. I'm either a red wine from Aldi or I'm a glass of Krug, and that's me.
Great.
Speaking of Jack Whitehall, I did Fresh Meat with, he described me, and I think it's very, very accurate. He described me as a can of White Lightning on top of a Harper's Bazaar. Those are my two extremes. He's right. He's absolutely right.
Do you feel like that was the job that kind of opened you up to a more mainstream...
audience,
or do you think, like, yeah?
I was lucky. I had done a job just beforehand a film called Dreams of a Life, which was like a documentary feature film in a way that had these fictional elements that I was involved in. And I played a real life woman called Joyce Carol Vincent, who died in Wood Green and wasn't discovered for 3 years. And when they found her, the TV was still on. You know, she died and the TV had gone through the Thatcher era and the Diana era. And when I got that role as an independent film lover and an actor at that time, it was just the absolute bullseye for me. And so I did that film and wasn't sure what would happen with it. And then I did Fresh Meat and was just convinced that I'd killed the show dead and I would never work again.
What are you talking about? You were so paranoid.
I was so memorable.
Darling. But Charlotte, I wondered if you... Charlotte was excellent. No, but I would have thought you were a comedian playing that part. I didn't know that you were a serious actress because you're so funny.
You were a force of nature on it.
Thank you.
You couldn't not watch it. It was so exciting.
Well, it was kind of almost focused around you and what you said and how you put everyone in their place.
That's lovely of you to say.
But don't you think, Jessie?
So you felt completely worried about that?
I went from doing like the most serious job I'd ever done to doing that. And I was just sure that I was killing the whole vibe. I was so insecure. I was so sure that all my choices were wrong and my instincts had led me down the wrong path. And oh my God, when it comes out, I've got this shaved head and everyone's going to know who I am. I'm not going to be able to hide. So I went to Cuba. I went to a family wedding in Cuba.
To hide out.
And was just like so happy that the first episode was airing while I was still there. And then I got, because there's no internet in Cuba, there certainly wasn't at the time, and things are changing there now, but I remember getting to an airport layover and checking my Hotmail on like a paid Wi-Fi thing wherever I was on the stopover, just to see if my mom had emailed me or, you know, if people needed to get hold of me. And there was a message from Tony Gardner, one of the actors in the first series. He was throughout, but one of the most incredible actors and sweetest men, and he'd emailed all of us saying, just get ready for your life to change. And I was like, what?
And it did.
What does that mean? And then it did. But I was lucky because Dreams of a Life and Fresh Meat came out at the same time. And if you're an actor, you know that if you get that 1-2 punch, or sometimes 1-2-3 punch, it's like a really special thing. Because it was punch. Like industry people Critical knew claim. Me from Dreams of a Life. The indie world was engaging Fantastic. With that story. And then suddenly you have this whole other world of people over here with Fresh Meat. So that hardly ever happens. And I'm really
So you had all the ducks in the row at the time?
At the time, absolutely.
I mean, 100%. You'd fucking been working since you were 6, babe. So I feel like you'd earned it.
Shall we have some dessert?
I want to...
No, darling, that means Mummy's going to sit here because you made the ribs.
Oh, shit, okay.
Jessie, why have they gone purpley?
What?
The peaches on the top.
I have no idea, Mum. How was it?
I'm not sure they were that caramel.
Were they not? Well, hold on.
No,
not I didn't
great.
Do this.
I don't drink.
Oh, whatever. So, Zowie, you talk about food so beautifully and memory, which is just like the most perfect guest for us to have. But also, I'd love to know, you've travelled a lot. You seem to enjoy eating and drinking and eating out. Are there any like specific like London spots that you adore, or even in LA, like where you won't ever miss out on, or when you're in Broadway, apart from Italy, which you love.
Love it.
Are there any other spots that you just couldn't live without or you have such fond memories of?
So funny. With London, I draw a blank. Because I realise I really am a Londoner. And so if someone says, where do you like to eat? I would say my mum's house.
Yeah, right.
There's also places that I've just been to as a child. The Blue Lagoon on Stoke Newington Church Street is somewhere that I went as a child.
I remember that.
Do you remember it?
Yeah.
With a huge aubergine outside.
Yeah.
Very phallic, a bit like our dessert.
Yeah.
Sticking
They're very
out the
sweet
front.
In there.
For me, as you've perceived quite rightly, food and psychology go hand in hand for me. And that is somewhere that I've always felt comfortable. That's somewhere as a child I could just always feel was safe and homely and sweet. And I had my 30th birthday dinner in there. I could have gone anywhere. I went to the Blue Lagoon.
I love that.
In St. Newington. Because it's just good food, and they've maintained their prices and they've maintained their ethos, and that means a lot. I actually lived above it for about 3 years in a friend's flat.
Dedication.
So I had the aubergine outside my window. I had just that phallic symbol. Just, it was just hanging there, just looking up at me all the time. So my London choices are always going to be nostalgic like that.
Yeah.
I feel like in LA, where did I really love the last time I went? I lived downtown.
Mm.
There was a Mexican fusion place. I can't remember the exact name, but it's adjoined to a hotel called the Freehand Hotel, which is just unbelievable, which is around the corner from where I lived. And I'm a creature of habit, so I went there all the time. And they had this chicken. I'm a fan of chicken and yogurt together, maybe because I grew up in a Turkish community. There was a lot of sort of bread, chicken, and a very rich yogurty dip, which you'd see some people try and go, oh, that's a bit rich. And I was like, oh, I could have another one of those. There's also a place called Squirrel.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which everyone knows. So I think,
but
I
the
mean,
lines do my nut in.
Absolutely do my head in.
You
however.
Can get Postmate.
Well, you can get a Postmate, but I just, again, feel like the mixture of flavours there feels like it was made for me. Mm. So if you're telling me I can have porridge with chicken on top, that just makes sense. Yeah. It just makes sense to me.
A savoury porridge, you're prone to.
Savoury porridge saved my life.
She should meet Sam.
Statement. Your new novel.
My new novel, Savoury Porridge Saved My Life. It sold 3 copies and that's as many as it's going to sell. I lost my voice, again, the chapter in the book. I lost my voice doing a show, and it was the first time I've ever been that vulnerable in that capacity, and so I had to completely change my diet. They want to, when you're performing in the West End, inject you immediately with everything that's just going to solve the problem on the spot, because obviously no one wants to lose money, they don't want you out of the show and all the rest of it. And I was determined to do it holistically. And so I had to change my diet. One of the things that you can have without too much trouble is oats. Avocado is really great.
Tomato.
Onion, absolutely no tomato at all. Onion, garlic, turmeric. So I ended up making a lot of weird savoury porridges. So when I read the squirrel menu, I was like,
you know,
guys,
me.
I feel like you might have stolen some of these random recipes, you know.
Jessie, what do you avoid?
What, when...
For eating.
Oh, yeah, spice. That's a great question. Spices.
Heat, spice, tomato.
Citrus.
Yeah.
Coffee, alcohol.
I know, all the kind of good bits.
All the fun bits.
Yeah. And dairy, but, I mean, yeah.
Sometimes you can feel it lubricates. It goes one way or the other.
Yeah, it can be a bit clogged. I mean, yeah, I learnt the hard way when I had like
completely
a Texas.
Lost your voice.
Well, that was because I was on a stupid diet.
What was the diet?
Oh, I fucking just wanted to lose those weight.
But you have the most wonderful presence and figure and face.
Thanks,
it's
babe.
Awful when I hear women saying that.
I think everyone that has to be photographed, unless you are the most thick-skinned, most confident, self-confident person.
Yeah, I have
person.
Given up the ghost, darling.
What do you mean?
My angles. Angles are everything.
No, you're learning, Mum. But I think everyone goes through an anxiety of that idea that you can be photographed and that you can't choose that photograph, and then it comes out and you're like, oh, and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but that was one of the, for me, that was one of the most fun chapters for me to write in my book, because I feel like it was the first time that I really told the truth about what my experience on the red carpet was. And it's not necessarily the hype that everyone thinks it is, that you've somehow become like this oiled, incredibly glowy, flowing haired, like slender
like
creature.
Hours.
Like, I remember my first big red carpet, I was surviving on mini Snickers and like Diet Coke because I was just so scared of not fitting into anything.
Yeah.
So it's so weird because actually when I grew up, and again, we grew up in the time before this awful pressure of online presence and filters and Instagram and all the rest of it. But I was at school, my first year of school, I was so severely bullied. I was already very thin, but I became so anxious that I became like you know, a scrawny, tall, lanky presence in the world that was just so visible that the bullying increased. But I would always look at the girls in my class who were larger and seemed happy. Does that make sense? And I was like, I've known from a very young age that being thin actually equates to sometimes something else going on. If it seems unnatural, if you're fighting for it and it's not your real body type, there's just a different look to it, you know? And I would always pray to be larger. So I think I had a different start in life. I was like, this thin thing is just not... Maybe it's also an African thing, where it's like, you're looking a bit underweight. I was bullied for being thin, yeah.
But you were very tall as well.
Yeah.
So you, like... Did you fit? You were taller than all the other kids in your, and so
yeah,
and more developed. I don't know. Like, was it just like,
no? She's a gazelle.
You are a gazelle.
Oh God, well you're right. A gazelle. Sort
you don't
of
want to be a gazelle when you're
running down
what,
the mountain and going absolutely insane. Well, I feel like what I don't understand sometimes is being sold the image of sometimes the person who I remember being the most miserable as.
As that's the aspirational.
And that's the aspiration.
Yeah, aspiration, yeah.
So when Kate Moss suddenly burst onto the scene, I was like, oh, she sort of looks like me when I was 11 and I was severely anxious and depressed because I was being bullied. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I look at some, you know, when suddenly Marilyn Monroe or, you know, even more recently, just actors who just look much more like women burst onto the screen, I was like, ah, oh, yes, that's what I don't know, that's what I identify as being much more in your own skin. I think also my relationship to food really changed when I was in my teens, when I was 16, because my mum was diagnosed with cancer. And she was given the worst diagnosis you can get, which is non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I forget which grade at the time. But it was like, yeah, so really sorry, this is bad news, it's probably curtains for you. And my mum, who's still with us, thank you to every god that there is, used food as the way to turn it around. Mm. She was not going to be someone who just went quietly into the chemo sessions and into, you know, the medication and all the Western medicines without having an alternative to balance it out. I have an incredible godmother who's the most wonderful... oh, God, my menstrual cycle. When you do tinctures and things...
Oh, homeopath.
Like, homeopath. So my godmother's a homeopath. Her and my mum start talking and connecting and talking about, at that time, which wasn't sexy or endorsed by any pop stars or celebrities, the macrobiotic diet. And my mum started to do cooking classes in macrobiotic cooking. And of course, all the Western doctors who, again, have an agenda or have some kind of link to pharmaceutical this or that can be very innocent, also can be very dodgy, were saying, oh, why are you wasting your time with that? You know, and she was like, this is what I feel is going to help me. And even they couldn't deny the incredible turnaround in her health.
Does she still, to this day, kind of live by those?
She keeps elements of it. It's such an extreme way of eating that it would be hard to keep it up for 15 years. She's, you know, thankfully been clear now for 15 years.
Did she have chemo as well?
She had chemo as well. So she indulged the Western way of approaching it. And she also indulged
the
homeopathic, holistic way and the nutrition way. We often talk about food as this punishment or this thing you're supposed to avoid or change or deprive yourself of. And when you see someone... Oh, I can start crying now. When you see the person that you're closest to, essentially, in the world, saying, this is how I choose to use food and nutrition in the face of this thing where everyone's telling me just lie down and take it, is it's a marvel, really. It really is. The transformative power of food is real. And I have, you know, firsthand life experience of that. And so... if I even thought about trying, you know, getting an eating disorder or whatever, I think of my mum and, you know, I'm soon put right on that page.
You and your mum sound incredibly close.
Yeah.
I guess you must be quite excited that you're going to be
closer to her now rather than Margate? I mean, or you've been, I mean, will you see her every week? Or is it kind of just like, is it a we live together at the moment, so it's kind of a different situation, but we're one of those ones where we speak about three times a day.
I speak to my mum three times a day. When I was on Broadway, it was so funny. I would come off stage and I would get a text from her being like, how did things go? And I, you know, it's a 5-hour time difference. So you'd get off at like 9:30. I'm thinking 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2. You know, she'd stay up till like 3 or 4 in the morning just to make sure I was okay. And, you know, there's such a thing as being too close. So I think my mum and I is hugely close. Sometimes I think maybe this is too close and like you have to do work to branch out in your own way. But to not acknowledge your relationship to your mother is doing yourself a disservice. I've always felt that. As close as you can stand to your mother is as close as you can stand to anyone else, is what my therapist says. And I think she's absolutely right.
How interesting.
I think it's
darling.
Right.
Can I have your therapist's number? Yeah, Zowie, thanks so much for doing this.
I love you too.
Like, you can come again.
I'd love to.
Good luck with the new book. But I feel like you don't need any luck. You are fantastic.
Of course I do.
No, you're okay. You're excellent. Everything is, the stars are aligned and you are brilliant and inspiring. So thank you so much. And thank you for being such a wonderful guest for Table Manners.
Thanks, Jessie. I'm so glad I finally have my death row meal. I can go out and commit that crime that I know I couldn't have done if I hadn't got the meal in place.
Well, I loved that.
What a gorgeous woman.
You're her spirit animal.
I know, darling.
She's so articulate.
So articulate.
So, is the motive the right word? She's so passionate, but also so...
She's very considered.
Yeah, so considered, but like... She thinks a lot. Sense of humour.
Great fun. Sense of humour. Thinks about things. Thinks about important things, not silly things. And she's quite selfless.
I'm going to call her. Now I have her number.
Good.
When we were worried about where she was in the cab. Good. That's it. That's my number now that I'm going to call. Good. And say hi.
And what a treat to have little Charlotte here.
I know, little Charlotte. Charlotte is a grown woman mum.
I know.
Yeah.
Nurse Gilbert. Who died.
Oh, well, don't spoil it for anybody who
hasn't
seen.
It was 2 seasons ago.
I know, but some people haven't watched Call the Midwife, Mum.
They should have.
Anyway, yeah, it's just been a really wonderful Friday night. The perfect kind.
How were my ribs, darling?
They were stupendous, Mum. Honestly.
And I do think mascarpone is a great substitute for cream.
I disagree. I like it in something else.
No, I think you're wrong.
It's a bit powdery.
Is it
do you know
powdery?
What I mean, Alice?
It's almost like grainy,
yes.
You're so bloody stupid.
Give me fucking clotted cream any day over mascarpone.
And it's not as fattening.
Yeah, no shit.
No, I love it.
The grain.
I love it.
Is the misery.
But I think it reminds me of tinned cream that we used to have when we were little. Because you didn't get fresh cream because, you know, I was almost a war baby.
Oh, sorry, Mum. Do you want to do a new episode of Table Manners?
Why?
Do you want to tell me about your life?
No.
And your memories?
No.
What was your most nostalgic smell when you were younger?
Petrol.
It's only 10 o'clock. Oh, petrol? What the fuck? You said what?
Because we used to go to Blackpool and fill up the car.
Thank you. You've been listening to Table Manners. That's my mum, Lenny, with a bit of the coronas. Thank you for listening.
Jessie, what
And thank
is,
you, Zowie.
Jessie, what is your karaoke song?
I don't like karaoke.
Okay, so when I have it at my party this year...
I will be the MC.
No. Just, you've got to choose a song. Otherwise, you're going to like, be
honestly,
sent to Siberia.
I feel like I'd cry on stage.
Would it be a Whitney?
No, that's very ambitious, Mum. No.
So if you do what Jessie J did and go to China and have to sing songs.
Yeah.
Covers.
Yeah.
What would be your best cover, not your karaoke?
Are you putting me on a plane to China,
China to
do a voice competition?
No.
Okay.
What would be your favourite cover song? A song you'd like to cover?
Oh.
A Billie Holiday.
Mum, I'm too tired for this shit. Can we talk about this?
We'll play next time.
Tomorrow.
All right.
We'll play next time. I love you, but I'm tired.
Okay, darling.
Love you, Mum.
Love you too, darling.
The music you've heard on Table Manners is by Peter Duffy and Pete Fraser. Table Manners is produced by Alice Williams.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.